Be in court on an urgent application on 31 July. It's in connection with an order we issued in the Auction Alliance matter, where we didn't issue the reasons for the order due to the urgency of finalizing our decision. And it's not unusual for courts or tribunals to issue orders and follow the reasons later, and we now find ourselves in the High Court. Of course, in terms of the Constitution, there is a remedy if there's any conflicts between public entities, which is that there should be other measures of redress before you resort to the courts. So with that, Jefferson, our contact details, and I really am very pleased to be here today and report, and we are always, always very receptive and very interested to hear from the honourable members and from any external stakeholders how they think we can improve our service offering, what we believe is a service offering to the public. And with that, we thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Bunch. Is that correct then? Yes. There's just the one slide, but I can't read it, so I don't know quite what it is. It's in blue. It's called adjudication.
That is the sadly screenshot of our cases beyond this international database, Jefferson.
Because I can't read it, you see. Does it indicate, well, like, these are the cases you've held, and whether they were accepted, returned, or whatever?
It would indicate that. If it is overturned, that would indicate that it was overturned. That's another point, or upheld or not yet.
Okay, so that's what's said, because I just can't read it.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you
very much. And thank you for, really, for me, this is my first experience of getting an understanding of what the National Consumer Tribunal is doing. And what appears to be a creative approach to operating given the constraints on your budget. But having said that, if I could just turn to the members, Honourable McIntosh, Honourable Van der Merwe, Honourable Mabasa.
Madam Chair, I must congratulate Mrs. de Blanche and her team for a very good presentation. I learned a lot, and it's good to see that you're not only meticulous about the legal implications and your inquisitorial, and also aware that you can be challenged all the time, but also that you are concerned to save money and you're making use of good IT for that. I just want to try to understand where we are in the National Credit Act. I just want to give you two examples as a simple farmer. The one is, I was talking to a lawyer in Ladysmith in KwaZulu-Natal, and he was saying, I was saying to him, well, these land laws have made huge business for you guys. So he then said, oh no, he said, there's some other things that have affected us. Well, every Wednesday there was a roll of 2 or 3 hours on debt orders and so on. And he said the National Consumer Act has reduced those sort of 3 hours every morning, and all these local country attorneys would be queuing to get their fees, to about 15 minutes. And I thought, well, hooray for that. But could you just explain to me why that has changed? And is it you guys who are doing a good job in changing it? That's the first. The second one is that I'm a farmer, and I've always lent money to my farm workers. Now I was told by a local lawyer that that's illegal. So, of course, I could rejoice to my workers and say, you know, the new government says it's illegal, no more squelet, no more loans. But another farmer said, no, you can't do that. People are used to getting loans. So what we now call it is not a loan. It's an advance on your salary. Because in any event, they were paying it off over a year or whatever it was, bit by bit from the salaries, we did a deduction. Now, am I technically correct that I'm being like some guys finding a loophole around the Credit Act, even if it's for a good cause, but that's a challenge. So I just want to even mention those two examples to help me understand what's going on out there in the society.
Yeah, very practical and valid example. Thank you very much. Honourable Van der Merwe.
Yeah, Chair, I also thank for the presentation. I can't claim to have understood everything, because it's quite dense, the kind of work you do, and it's very much dependent on your expertise in the field of law. But it strikes me that we've got a problem. I mean, there shouldn't be more cases coming to the tribunal in that to that extent. I mean, 158% increase in cases on, was it consent orders? That strikes me that there's either people are feeling that they've got to try everything, or they are dissatisfied with the original decision, and maybe it's being extremely diplomatic, but it would strike me that that is an unacceptable high. We don't actually want the work of the tribunal to grow, I don't think. We want the decision to be final and the law to have been properly applied. So I'm a little bit alarmed at the growth, and I think it indicates a problem. But tell me if I'm wrong. That was my... I don't want to go into the court case between yourselves and the NCC, because I think that's, well, sub judice first of all, and second of all, it's sub judice first and last. So I think if you could try and explain to me what your objectives would be in terms of caseload problem, which I see as a negative. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. I'm also expressing gratitude to Mr. Bunch. I also want to appreciate the fact that these are covered in 11 languages. You know, it's something that must really appreciate. But I just want to have a feel whether they are relevant in this case. There's I just want to give a practical example of a case in my constituency where an elderly person of 83 years old is kicked out of a house because he had a four-roomed house and PEM Building Society loaned money to a son who built bedrooms. And as a result of that, the son not paying, then the whole family gets evicted from the house. And but what shocked me more, even before going into the merits and the demerits, was the fact that people can take an 83-year-old grandmother to sleep in the cells for the convenience of taking the person to court the following day. So whether that falls in the arena of work or not, noting that most of the poor people have courts are very inaccessible to them. You know, the same thing that we were seeing under cooperatives. Thanks, College.
Yes, I think that really is very important. You know, the law is the law and there's justice, and sometimes, of course, they're not quite in alignment, as it were. We would hope that to bring and ensure that all our law legislation, the interpretation becomes just. But there was one thing, and I may have missed something, but it appeared to me as if you were focusing quite a bit on the importance of investigation, as if this is quite a major area, that a lack of investigation by various regulators has led to cases being turned down or not upheld by the National Consumer Tribunal. Now, we don't want that. I think Honourable Van der Merwe indicated, well, we don't want you to grow. You know, we don't want these cases to grow, actually. We'd like to see few of them. And that seems to be that we have to rely on the regulators perhaps exercising their duties more effectively so that we don't get to that kind of situation. Perhaps you can just clarify that. And the other thing was this, was it the consent notice or an interim, what was it, an interim?
Interim relief, actually.
Yeah, interim relief. I didn't quite understand that, you know, but perhaps I need to study the act again, that you, somebody, you may have been able to issue an interim release, but now as soon as this consent order has been signed, I hope I'm correct, you're unable to do that. And, you know, I perhaps want it as clear as you can make it. Do you think that the consent orders, or perhaps some of them, may be done under, what's the word, my suitable word to use, under pressure? Under pressure. Duress.
Thank you, Chairperson. With your permission, I'll also ask my colleagues to address some of the questions. Thank you. Let me just start on the last question around interim relief. To be eligible to appear before the tribunal for interim relief, you should have had a prohibited conduct matter referred for prosecution. Once a choice is made to issue a compliance notice, you can then not issue a make a choice to refer it for prohibited conduct because you've made your choice as regulator. That is the problem that we faced in with Nayara. In terms of the investigations, I've mentioned the investigation because that was the major reason why we couldn't uphold on the procedural side the City of Johannesburg matter. Because you can only issue a compliance notice if you on reasonable grounds believe that prohibited conduct was, that the person engaged in prohibited conduct. So you can only get to a reasonable belief if you have the facts to support it. How do you gather the facts? You gather the facts through an investigation. So that is basically what those two specific aspects they relate to. In terms of the question about advances and loans, I do trust that you then don't appear before us because we definitely look at substance and not the terminology that people use. And that is what you have charged us to do, to look at substance and not to look at technicalities and look at how people dress something up. It is what it really is that we have to look at. In terms of the other questions around more cases, around debt rearrangement, we do not believe we see the number of debt rearrangements that should be coming to the tribunal. There's so overutilization of the magistrates' courts at a high cost to consumers, whereas those matters, definitely where there's an agreement between a credit provider and the consumer, could come to the tribunal at a cost of 100 rand. Instead of being charged, my colleague would tell me 3,000, instead of being charged 3,000 to 4,000 rand to put that matter before a magistrate's court. So that is something where we as the tribunal say we will see more debt rearrangements. What we must say to ourselves as an institution is how do we deal with it more efficiently and cost effectively. Because it's unfortunately a sign also of our economic situation and the distress many people find themselves in financially. And it does give them a way of saving their homes, saving their cars, saving their furniture in a way that's also a bit more dignified. So with that, if I can please pass on to Hazel Deborah, she's the registrar, and then Marilis will then talk around the legal issues specifically.
Thank you. Just to address the issue by Honourable Member Fundamental about the consent orders and to reiterate and expand on what the Chairperson has indicated, we will still see these numbers rising. In our first quarter, our consent orders increased by 110% as compared to quarter one of last year. What this also shows is we are going to have a problem in the economy, in a sense that once a person is under debt review, they won't be able to obtain credit until they've got a debt clearance certificate. So it is going to have a great impact on our economy going forward. The other reason in terms of the growth as well is that the AZT has done a lot of workshops explaining our role and processes. And what the debt council, the feedback we've received from the debt council is that the rate of efficiency is much greater by bringing the consent order to the tribunal. Now, in terms of looking at efficiencies, the chairperson indicated before that one consent order was allocated when we were receiving 11 cases in a financial year. One consent order was allocated to one tribunal member who dealt with it over a period of 3 days. That was then increased to 8 consent orders being addressed over a period of 3 days, and then a further increase of 12 consent orders being addressed within 3 days. Also, in terms of efficiencies, the consent orders, we don't have a full hearing, but they are adjudicated on in chambers. So wherever tribunal members sit over the country, they then deal with these consent orders in, at their homes or wherever they are. So the levels of efficiencies, we increase levels of efficiencies, we monitor the turnaround times in terms of the consent orders, and we therefore will see a greater increase. Yes.
Very much.
I think my colleagues probably answered almost all the questions. I would just want to add perhaps that the question number two, the one about the advance on salary, that a kit agreement by any other name remains a kit agreement. So from that perspective, if it is an advance with interest, then it would be a credit agreement. I think possibly the interest would be the difference. If there's no interest in that, that would be in order. And then in relation to the fourth question, the one about the elderly person, unfortunately that won't fall within the domain of the tribunal. However, I'm aware that the High Courts do actually inquire about the means of the specific consumer before they would grant an order for execution against that property.
So what you're saying is that whether it's called a loan or an advance, if it carries no interest, is it legal or illegal?
Chairperson, in relation to, if you look at the definition of a credit agreement in terms of the Credit Act, it is quite specific with what is determined a credit agreement. So there must be either a cost or interest, and similarly, if you call the interest any other name, call it a cost or admin fee, as long as if you borrow somebody 100 rand and they pay you exactly 100 rand back, then it won't be a credit agreement and it won't be illegal.
I'm very happy we won't have to somewhere release Honourable McIntosh for a day in court or something, by the sound of it anyway. But I'm still trying to get my head around just something here. You know, I think one of us, perhaps it was Honourable van der Merwe, certainly I felt the same way. This one can go through legislation, and then once it, you begin to implement it and you see it in practice and operating, and I always ask myself, what are the implications for this? For someone, let's say where my own constituency is, Alexander Township, and I can guarantee nobody's going to understand it. So then how do I help in that situation if I myself find it quite complex, you see? And it may be useful for us, notwithstanding the 11 languages which Honourable Mabasa has already, I think, applauded here, for you, if you, and I know time is against you and funds and so on, but if there was some way, maybe is it this constitutional trust or something, could release some funds for a simpler sort of handbook, a really easy access one, which we could sort of take with us to that constituency office and be in a far better position to comment. The other one was on a very business and industrial and manufacturing side, because one, you see, if one is doing something, carrying out some actions and so on in the course of one's business in manufacturing, if you like, and this is interpreted as a contravention of some aspect of the Consumer Act, then, and just to get on with the job, though, in a way, you know, you don't want to hold up the line, you sign consent order, you sign right, I'm going to sign this off, and it goes through then to yourself. There's been no interim relief. And if we may need to review, you see, the National Consumer Act, that's what I'm just looking at itself, Protection Act, because the last thing we want is for that to impede manufacturing and industrialization. We want it to be consumer. But, for example, I could say when I'm buying a car, that's the car I want. Then the next day it doesn't quite suit my grey and my blue, so I want to go and change it. I want a red one or another colour. And I complain, I want the right to change my car. It's not the right colour. And that's what I've had coming to me as well as chair these letters. And you put them aside because you think, well, that's very small in the scheme of things. But it perhaps is not so small if that's the kind of thing that is taken up rather loosely and then putting you under pressure as well of work because of complaints that come through from business. So what we're looking for is a fair act. So just a brief comment before we conclude this meeting or adjourn it.
Chairperson, that is exactly where the issue of due process comes in. You cannot simply take a complaint and say it has merit because a consumer complained. There has to be an even-handedness between the amongst the parties before the regulators and before ourselves. It doesn't mean because the consumer says I'm hard done by, they in fact hard done by. It might very well be the business that is abused and not the consumer. And we do look at that. And it often happens. We do see people exploiting the legislation. And basically sometimes just for the nuisance factor rather than the fact that they think they're entitled to some form of relief. The other thing is in terms of the concept that you're raising is an interesting concept, Jefferson, but there is, of course, provision in the legislation, not in this legislation, but there's examples. In the competition legislation, there's examples of exemptions from prosecution for prohibited conduct, where the parties can go to the regulator and say, may we be exempted for X, Y, and Z reason, either we're small or we contribute to economic growth or it's a small industry growing, etc., etc. So there is a precedent for that in competition legislation under the provisions for exemptions in terms of, I think it's Section 6 or 8 of the Competition Act. In terms of our caseload, what we have also done, we do not see ourselves as a central agency being able to provide access to redress to the entire South Africa. That is why we work with other adjudicators. We work with the provincial consumer affairs offices. When we as tribunal members have capacity building workshops, we invite the provinces to attend with us and so that we all learn together. The second thing we do, when we have a consumer or a case party that are in Cape Town, Limpopo, Durban, wherever, we go there because it doesn't matter to us whether a tribunal member travel from PE to Durban or from PE to Pretoria. And we host the hearing at their offices. Why? It creates awareness of an office, what we do, and those offices can also do a bit of public relations with the consumers in their provinces. The big thing, of course, that still requires some work is around whether the provinces have sufficient capacity to deal with consumer protection at the provincial level, and then the second issue around that would be then the integration of provincial and national legislation. And that is something, of course, that's within the domain also of the Minister of Trade and Industry to consider. So, in conclusion, Chairperson, we see our caseload growing. We see that we and DTI has agreed for us to also have more full-time tribunal members that will help. But what we also say is we have this growth outlook. But we also say that we can't become this huge organization. So we must constantly look at how do we offset the need for increased services and still manage our growth. We definitely cannot become bigger than a Department of Trade and Industry, for example. So we are very, very mindful of that, and that is why we also work closely with other ombudsman's offices, other ombudsman schemes, and we also look at how can we ensure that what comes to us is absolutely what has to come to us, that really cannot be dealt with anywhere else. And we have already to date had three what we call adjudicative roundtables, what we do at those roundtables is we invite any entity that has any role to play in adjudicating disputes between parties, and we sit together and we see how can we align our roles so that we get left with what we really should be left with, but also knowing that there are others who can be dealing with the other matters. Thank you, Chairperson.
Ms. Terblanche, Chairperson of National Consumer Commission, and your team, I think you've heard that the committee really appreciate presentation you've shared with us. I'm also pleased that the co-op stayed behind, because yes, of course, they also need to have access to the National Consumer Act, the tribunal itself. And ourselves, I do think, and I'm sure, and I hope members will agree with me, we would certainly want you to come again and share this with us on a more regular level, perhaps spend some more time, just to keep us abreast of what you are doing, and also so that, well, I certainly get a better understanding myself and perhaps the other members. We do apologize for the fact that not all our committee members are here. Some are attending family bereavements and so on, and others are attending to party business. So, but you do have a stalwarts here, as it were, the chairperson of co-ops, Honourable Mabasa, Honourable Susan Demurla, and of course the two members from COPE, Honourable Maggie Tosh, and also Honourable Huang. Thank you very much for being here with us, and yourselves. Thank you to the teams. Thank you. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you.